Welcome to Regulated and Relational, the bi-monthly podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. Today, Dr. Amy with Trauma Healing Accelerated is in the studio with Julie and Ginger to explore the biology of attachment trauma. Let's join them now.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Regulated and Relational, our podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. I'm Julie Beam.
And I'm Ginger Healy.
And we're excited to share with you from both our personal experiences and our professional knowledge what it truly means to be attachment-focused, trauma-informed, and how we can help children impacted by early childhood trauma. Today, we have a special guest in the podcast studio with us, and I didn't ask Amy how to say her last name, so here we are. Dr. Amy is how she is known to the world. So we're going to let her introduce herself, or Ginger maybe is like going to clear that up for me. But Dr. Amy, we're so happy to have you here.
Well, thank you. I think that I've let you guys know how long I've wanted to connect with you guys with my own history of foster parenting and then adopting. And so it's been very meaningful for me to have our worlds finally intersect.
Awesome. Awesome. Would you give folks your last name just so that we make sure that in case they're looking for you and can't find you?
Yeah, there's a reason why I go by Dr. Amy. My last name is Apigian. It's actually Armenian. My dad was adopted by an Armenian family. I carry the name, not necessarily the blood, but I carry an Armenian name, which is Apigian.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. And we definitely will have the links and things to all of your work in our show notes, so that won't be a problem. Ginger, could you give us a little background on Dr. Amy before we just dive into what I know is going to be so exciting to talk about?
Yeah, this is great. I am so happy to introduce Dr. Amy to everybody because her bio is amazing and it will really help shape our conversation today. Dr. Amy is a double board certified physician, boarded in both preventative and addiction medicine with a double master's in biochemistry and public health. She graduated from Loma Linda University in 2010 with her medical degree, and then she went on to a 3.5 year general surgery residency. She has been a foster mom and an adoptive mom, and she's had personal experience with trauma in her home and then nonprofit working with other adoptive families and children and the family's children until trauma became her own personal story, with her body giving in during her surgery residency training. Through all of these life experiences, she has discovered that life experiences become one's biology, and that trauma is more than our psychology. It requires a specific process and a holistic integrative approach for addressing the stored trauma in the body. She left her thriving conventional addiction medicine practice, is a certified functional medicine physician, and has numerous trainings and certification in functional medicine, mental health, addiction, and trauma therapy modalities. Seeing the huge gap in both medicine and mental health for addressing stored trauma and its effects on the body, her mission is now to help 1 million people accelerate their trauma healing journey by addressing the biology of trauma and to bring the model of the biology of trauma to every medical and mental health educational system by the year 2041. She does this through her business, Trauma Healing Accelerated. Her podcast, The Biology of Trauma, with 130,000 downloads and an active YouTube channel, free masterclasses, her annual Biology of Trauma summits with almost 200,000 registrations, but ultimately inviting people to her educational and experiential courses for individuals and her professional certificate training program. You are reaching so many people, Dr. Amy, and continue to do that. You have big goals and you're meeting them, which is one of the many reasons that we have collaborated with you and been with you. And so we love this relationship and the sharing of knowledge, and we are in awe of all you have done, and we are so mission aligned, and I just love that. So I think where I want to start off today, we talk a lot about feelings. We talk a lot about emotions, but there is more than that. There is a biological piece here that you are an expert in that we want to bring in and talk about and learn more about, especially our listeners, as we talk about healing from the impacts of attachment difficulties and trauma. So take it away.
Thank you, Ginger. Thank you so much. And again, I love and appreciate what you guys are doing in the world. When I started studying attachment, it was primarily to help Miguel try to figure out what he needed. And then in the process, I realized, oh, wait a second, I have attachment insecurities as well, and I've got my own work to do. And so it's been this process of continually digging deeper and deeper into trying to understand exactly what is attachment so that I could understand what exactly does a child need? What does an infant need? How would they come out not thinking that they have trauma, but yet clearly having an insecure attachment or a nervous system that is insecurely attached? And what does that even mean? So these were the questions that I wrestled with for years. And what I landed on is really like the biology of attachment, which is as much as, like you were saying, we understand more the psychology, we understand some of the thought processes, the belief systems that someone would have if they have an insecure attachment, whether anxious, avoidant, disorganized, whatever, however you want to categorize that. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to what's happening on a cellular level in the nervous system, which fascinates me. If that's how far we can take attachment, then we're really talking about the core of who we are. And we're really talking about something that is not going to go away with talk therapy. It's really not going to go away with just focusing on the behaviors. It's not going to go away with just trying to change our mindset. This is so much deeper. And as we look at what is it? So the body has an implicit memory. We talk about this in somatic work, where there's an implicit memory of the body and the experiences that it has had. These can be nonverbal. They mostly are nonverbal because explicit memories are held in our hippocampus in our brain. And as we look at attachment, all of attachment is an implicit memory that gets wired into the nervous system of the body and informs it how to live life. So we have our vagus nerve that really helps keep us alive. And that's like the big picture, but how do we live life? Well, that's all informed by this implicit memory of our body for the attachment and the relationship. And did I experience the world as a safe enough place, or is the implicit memory in my body one that informs me it's not safe and I have to keep my guard up? Maybe I need to isolate. Maybe I need to withdraw. Maybe it's not safe for me to even feel my own feelings. There's all these implicit memories of the body that inform all of that. So we're looking at a very simplistic view of attachment then being one's regulation and the degree of one's regulation coming out of their early childhood. You know, I know that this word, the spectrum, right, like is used for mostly autism or Asperger's, but we can use it for attachment too. And there's this spectrum. It's not a black and white. You either have it or you don't. Mm-hmm. Most people have some degree of attachment insecurity based on the implicit memories of their body, so that everyone generally can relate to, oh yeah, that's a belief system that I've held about myself. That's a sensation that I've had in the world. I have felt lost. I have felt alone. I have felt like I'm falling. I have felt like I'm failing. I have felt like I'm not enough. They can generally relate to that on some level. And so then we get to look at, well, then what was the degree of regulation that one experienced, or what was the degree of dysregulation that one experienced in their early childhood? Mm-hmm. And so when I was able to simplify it to that, where attachment is just regulation, attachment is the degree of regulation that I had coming out of my childhood, well, then I can look at what are the factors that would have contributed to that regulation or dysregulation. And now you have a whole list of things, right? Yes, you have the emotional relationship that a primary biological mother would have had with their child. And that is one element. And there are also other elements. So there's the nutrition. There is the neurodevelopment, like how much tummy time did you get? And were you able to have the freedom to move in the ways that you needed to move to start to understand and explore the world? And we don't generally think of neurodevelopment as one of the contributing factors to attachment, but it is, because those neurodevelopmental movements are part of what regulate an infant's nervous system. We also can look at biology factors, and I consider neurodevelopment a biology factor, but we can also look at genetics or epigenetics. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that can be off that will affect the attachment because it's affecting the regulation of the nervous system. One of the primary, I want to say easiest examples, is a methylation imbalance. Now, methylation imbalance has become much more popular, again, in the autistic world. And as we look at its effect and influence on attachment, we see that it can play quite a huge role as well. And there are three most common biochemical imbalances that I see in those with a strong, insecure attachment coming out of their childhood. Methylation imbalance being one of those. And more of society, so more and more children are being born as under-methylators. Methylation refers to the methylation imprints on our DNA that inform our body which parts of our DNA to read and which parts to keep silent. It's like walking into a library. Which book are you going to pick up and read? Which book are you going to leave on the shelf? That's our methylation. And an under-methylator, most of them tend to have genes affected that are going to influence the activity levels of serotonin and dopamine. Well, serotonin is your happy molecule.
Yes.
Dopamine is the neurotransmitter that's deeply involved with bonding. Mm-hmm. And so if you have an infant that has lower activity levels of those two, that baby's nervous system is less available for the relationship. So that even if you had a perfect mother, even if you had a perfect family, mm-hmm. even in that setting, the baby's nervous system is not going to feel it as much,
right?
Because their system is lacking enough serotonin and dopamine. Mm-hmm. And so they can still come out of their childhood feeling like, I wasn't seen. I wasn't heard. I wasn't mm-hmm. understood. And yet that was not the parents' experience.
Right.
That was maybe not the other siblings' experience, but that was their experience because of their genetics, or in this case, methylation is actually referring to epigenetics. Right. So this is just one example of how, oh my goodness, like there's actually other factors involved here in attachment. It's not just the relationship with one's primary caregiver.
I've got about 50,000 questions. Amy probably saw me over here like furiously writing.
I did. I was watching you take all these notes. I'm like, oh, I wonder what questions are going to come at me next.
First of all, I want to say, I wish we'd had you a couple of weeks ago when we were doing an episode on our inner working model. We covered that from an attachment theory standpoint and how that sets us up for all of our beliefs. So the audience is, we're all with you up until that point, but we have not talked about epigenetics. We really haven't talked about anything biological. So I'm just thinking that people might be out there going, epigenetics? Like, what is that? And, you know, like, what does that mean? And, you know, other than just gene expression, what does that mean? So I'm going to let you take that one.
Yeah. And thank you for that. In the autistic world, there's a gene that has become very popular, and it's called MTHFR. And this is a gene that has kind of taken on the main focus of epigenetics and methylation. And so many people are of the understanding that they can just do a DNA test, a test like 23andMe, for example. That's one example of a way to test your DNA. And it gives you information about your MTHFR gene. And there's this misunderstanding that if you have what are called SNPs, meaning the letters in your DNA are changed, well, then that means you have a methylation imbalance, and that means that you need to be on methylfolate. And that's not all the picture. And so as we look at methylation, this is a fascinating topic, you guys. So epigenetics is how we respond to our environment. And so this is something that's actually being passed on by our parents, by our grandparents, depending on how much stress and trauma they were under. So as a species, epigenetics is our way of responding to the environment to best survive. And if there's going to be more stress and trauma, well, then I better create offspring that are suited for stress and trauma. And undermethylators actually tend to be very competitive people. They tend to be very driven, very perfectionistic. And there's also a number of other traits, which is very helpful because we can look at those traits and we can suspect that someone's an undermethylator. Most people who go into medical school are undermethylators because you won't go into medical school unless you're able to push yourself to those limits. And so a lot of your athletes, right? But you could see this in kids very early on. Those who have tendencies for obsessive compulsiveness, they are generally undermethylators. This is just how it drives our nervous system, how it drives our biology based on which parts of our DNA it's reading and which parts are being silenced. And it's interesting that, of course, all undermethylators, I want to say, I maybe shouldn't say all, most have a high level of inner anxiety and tension. And yet one of the characteristics is that they hide it well. They appear quite calm on the surface. You would never know. And when you ask them if they are ones that actually are connected to their body, which again is another issue for undermethylators, but if they are connected to their body, they will report, yeah, like I've got a 9 out of 10 anxiety right now. And they're sitting there smiling at you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you're lying to me. And they're like, no, that's going on inside. Yeah. And they also tend to have depression because of that lower activity level of serotonin and dopamine. If they get placed on mood medications, because of their chemistry, they will respond to some mood medications much better than other mood medications. So it gives us all this information. And yet coming back to this big picture, it actually is directly related to how much folate a mother is taking. The more folate she has, if she has too much folate in her blood, her child is more likely to be born as an undermethylator. Well, we have all of our grains enriched in folate in America. Why? Because it was to protect us from having children with neural tube defects, because neural tube defects are caused by a folate deficiency. So we've, like many things, we've swung to the other extreme. Now we give mothers folate in all of our food because it's enriched. It's not just the multivitamin that they're getting the folate from. They're going into pregnancy already with a lot of folate and then adding folate to their prenatal vitamins. And so this baby is being exposed to too much folate and it's shifting society to one of undermethylation.
And on the one hand, because they are driven, competitive overachievers, there's an advantage, but is a poorly relational advantage. I mean, like we talk about that so much here on our podcast, the importance of being relational. And it's hard to be relational if you are anxious about and insecure about your attachment because you think people don't understand you, because you're undermethylated.
Yeah. I mean, it very much disrupts healthy relationship. And again, it's going to disrupt the healthy bonding because of the lower activity levels of serotonin and dopamine. So even just looking at dopamine, right? Like there's so much that's involved with dopamine. Dopamine is also the central neurotransmitter in all addictions. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the relationship between attachment and addictions, we understand that, wait a second, we're supposed to get our dopamine from joy, from healthy connection with people. And that should have happened in our attachment and bonding process. If it didn't, then we're constantly seeking for that dopamine from other places, food, the adrenaline junkies, right? Like the
anything that places, numbs.
Anything. And so here you have an undermethylator who is low in dopamine. So they're not getting that same level of joy and connection with the attachment and bonding process. So they are set up not only to have the attachment insecurities, but then to translate that into needing other things to to replace that dopamine. And most people with an addiction process are under methylators. We're like, wait a second. You mean that if I could test and I could just see if my child or myself was an under methylator and learn how to support my biology, then I wouldn't be fighting my biology when I'm trying to have relationships, when I'm trying to have healthy relationships, when I'm trying to end unhealthy addictions, all of this stuff. Like, it just makes more tools available for us. And the earlier that we can start them for a child, the better their life is going to be.
Is that what you would recommend, is testing, or are there other ways that you would go about, you know, shifting this biology?
Again, there are three most common biochemical imbalances. I've only shared one with you, and that's the methylation. There is a guide on my webpage, traumahealingaccelerator.com. If they go under the resources section, there is a guide there that's called the three most common biochemical imbalances. So that's where they can download that guide, because it will have the symptoms, the traits, the personality characteristics of each of these three imbalances. And most often, we can use those, it's like a checklist. We can use that checklist to get 90% confidence of, okay, I'm pretty sure they're this, because it's so dramatic, right? The other ones are something like copper excess and then pyroluria. The copper excess are those kids who have rages. They can just switch their mood in an instant, and they're very reactive. Whereas your pyroluria kids, they're going to be the ones who want to be alone. They're sensitive to light, to sound, to people. You have to actually look for them, because they're in their room in a dark corner reading a book, for example, right? Though they also tend to have scholastic problems because of their sensory overwhelm. They find it hard to retain what they read. So these are the kids who will read a paragraph. They'll be asked by the teacher or their parent, well, what do you think about that paragraph? And they literally cannot remember what they just read. They read it. They even read it out loud. It didn't stick. And so as you're looking at these traits and characteristics, you can start to identify, like, oh, wait a second, I've seen this child do this, and this is them. And for that reason, most of the time we're able to avoid testing in children, because obviously for many of them, they don't like testing, and it's a huge deal. And I even had to post a video on my YouTube channel about even how to get your child through a blood test, especially a child with attachment disorder, because it's a big deal. And so most of the time we're able to just go off of symptoms and traits, and then we are able to start dietary changes, nutritional changes, supplement changes to support the biology. One of the primary features that we find is that when we can bring in zinc, for example, zinc is one of the most common nutritional deficiencies in these biochemical imbalances. And I also want to say that a big feature of especially the copper excess and the pyroluria is something called oxidative stress. It's similar to inflammation, where it's just this reactive oxygen species that are very damaging to a cell, and it starts to accumulate outside the cell, inside the cell, even around our DNA, causing more and more DNA damage. Eventually, our body can't keep up with it, and that starts to trigger other health symptoms, digestive issues, skin issues, acne, whatever. It's a long list, and that will depend on, you know, kind of each person's genetic vulnerabilities for what symptoms will develop in them. But the earlier that we can come in and support that oxidative stress and help the body clear it out, these kids are going to be so much more successful in life. This accumulation of oxidative stress, again, usually from one or a couple of these biochemical imbalances, I actually ended up having all three, but it's this accumulation of oxidative stress that actually seems to be the trigger for adult onset PTSD, which is fascinating, because we've always thought, wait a second, no, it's the event that triggered the PTSD. And we're saying, actually, no, research is showing that the accumulation of oxidative stress has already been so great that the event just was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Wow.
If they had been going into that event better resourced on a cellular level, if we had been able to identify and help clear out that oxidative stress, that event would not have broken them. That event would have been something that they could have processed and moved through and not ended up with PTSD symptoms.
Yeah. That makes more sense now too, why everyone is different. Two people can experience that same event, but they're not coming out affected the same way.
Because they're not going into that event with the same biology. It's really not about the event. It's about what I call my pre-existing biology, my pre-existing regulation. And the more dysregulated my system is, the more it's at risk for having a very traumatic response to an event.
My question in all of that is there a chicken and egg relationship between the environment and what is happening genetically? Like, can the environment cause some of this biological malfunctioning?
That's exactly what it is. By the time that we identify that there is a problem, they have both.
Okay.
They have these contributing factors and they have the dysregulation. Which came first? We don't know, but by now they have both. Mm-hmm. And so that's why for me, an integrated holistic approach is always necessary, because by this time, it's a combination of many factors. We can look at the example of toxins. We know that babies can be exposed to toxins in utero, and that exposure then sets them up for having dysregulation of their nervous system, which sets them up for all this other kind of stuff, the oxidative stress, accumulating more toxins, bracing patterns, zinc deficiency,
right,
low serotonin activity. And so, wait a second, the zinc deficiency and low serotonin come first, and that's what caused the accumulation of toxins, or did the toxins come first? We don't know, because by this point, they have all of that. And we've got to address and support all of that. We need to learn how to address the serotonin activity. We need to learn how to address the zinc deficiency and the toxins and the emotional aspects, the relational aspects of regulation. We can't just do one piece at that point. It has to be a very integrated, holistic approach.
Well, and that makes sense to me. I mean, our whole podcast is called Regulated and Relational. There's not one without the other. And we often talk about the buffers, this, you know, those protective factors. And so you're bringing in this biology piece as this protective factor too. And so this is a great, you know, uploading of so much more information than we've really had the chance to dive into. It's absolutely fascinating.
Well, and I'm thinking about the primary founding children that ATN was founded to help. And those are the children who have come from very hard places, right? That have not had good enough, whatever it is, usually adoptive and foster, but also in some cases, ones that have some pretty complex medical issues that then become medical trauma that then also impacts their attachment, all of that. And the families that we've served in the last 27 years and the listeners who are out there that fall in that category will all be nodding their heads now going, there are some times that when I have just pursued a therapeutic psychological, you know, route, I haven't gotten very far because there are so many more things going on because of all of that early beginning. That's what I hear when you talk, Dr. Amy. I'm thinking about my own personal life experiences and the experiences I know of a lot of folks that have been close to ATN. And, you know, we went down the route of the biological, you know, we looked at some of these potentials for my daughter in particular, because we were searching everywhere. And I love the way you explain things, because, you know, it wasn't interesting to me. It was mind blowing. And I was reading it and was going, okay, well, you know, now I realize what I needed was a degree in biochemistry. But, you know, I know just enough to be dangerous at this point, but I do know that we started supplementing with zinc and we started doing some things that made a difference for her. I guess part of my personal life journey would be to say, you know, there are definitely biological stones that should be, you know, looked under to figure out what's going on here.
If you have a zinc deficiency, that nervous system is never going to be fully regulated. Right. I don't care how much relationship you throw at it. It needs zinc. It needs B6. These are essential needs. And so it just gives us more tools for us to be able to come in and support the nervous system in that regulation. Because when we have a regulated nervous system, it's available for so much more. It's available for more of the relationship. It's available for more of the therapy. And that's why I ended up calling my business Trauma Healing Accelerated, because when we bring in these other pieces that have been left out most of the time, we can accelerate the therapy process by supporting the biology. And to be able to be very intentional and strategic about figuring out, well, what biology pieces specifically will make the biggest difference for my child right now? Well, let's start there. And then as we work through that piece, there will be another lowest hanging fruit. And then we tackle that biology piece. But, you know, I've seen families try to only do the biology piece. They only go to a physician, naturopathic physician, chiropractor, whoever they choose to work with. And they're not doing these other pieces. They're not doing the neurodevelopment. They're not doing the parts work or the internal family systems. They're not doing all of these essential pieces. And it all needs to be done, I'm finding, at the same time. Because if I'm only doing one piece at a time, I literally am trudging through mud rather than being able to walk down a path.
Right.
And it's going to feel harder. It's going to be harder. The child's going to start to hate the process rather than feel like, oh no, like things are starting to flow. They're starting to move. I'm starting to get this. I'm starting to feel more connected. I'm starting to feel more alive. Mm-hmm. Let's do more.
Right.
Rather, it feels like you're having to drag them to these appointments because they hate the process.
Right.
Because it does feel like they're fighting sometimes against themselves, because it is their own body that they're fighting when we're not bringing in all of these pieces at the same time. And so, you know, as we talk about even just the zinc deficiency, if we're not replacing that, that one piece will hold us back.
Right.
It will hold us back. It will create the ceiling effect for how much we can do in these other places until we support that. And so these essential pieces are either kind of creating a cycle of dysregulation, or we can help them create a cycle of regulation where they're actually feeding off of each other. And my biology is supported in such a way that it's supporting the therapy that I'm doing. And the therapy that I'm doing is supporting my biology and promoting a biology of safety. And so they can either go together and work together, or they're fighting each other. Those are your two options.
I love that. One of the early questions that confused the active group of parents that were forming ATN back in the beginning was, we didn't have nearly the tools. But the question was, as we trudged through and grabbed all of these things and started trying them out, was, what order should you do them in? Which comes first? And I guess I was always one that said, why don't you do as much as you possibly can, as much as you can afford, as much as you can afford the time of, you know, because to me, it felt exactly that way, is that we would be doing movement therapies and somatic work and body work at the same time that we were doing weekly attachment therapy. And I was trying to learn as much as I could from a parenting standpoint, because none of it was enough by itself.
And you've got to be working on their diet and nutrition, because if they're on this, you know, whatever, let's just call it maybe a high sugar diet, and you're trying to have them do attachment therapy while their blood sugar levels are all over the place.
Right.
Good luck. Right.
We got some relief by removing dairy from her diet, you know, initially. And, you know, that was years ago. And now she's 27 years old and she's on dairy, but she also knows when it bothers her. You know, she monitors herself about those things, but it did for lack of a better scientific word, it was an irritant to her system. And she didn't need anything irritating her life, right? Because she was already struggling enough. And I'm glad that you're bringing this, you know, to the forefront, because I don't know that parents always think about the nutrition and the biochemical, you know, supplements and things that they could possibly do to make this, you know, more successful when they're trying all these other things, because I know how desperate we feel a lot of times.
Well, that's just it, right? Like, it's one of the hardest things that we will ever do is to really work with a child to shift their early experiences and those memories that got imprinted into their body and try to convince their body that life is different now. It's one of the hardest things that we can, the most rewarding and the hardest. And so when we can find additional tools that will just make things easier, just a little bit easier, even 5% easier, 10% easier, then that ends up sometimes being exactly the life-saving tool that the parent needed to be able to make it through this and not completely lose their sanity in the process.
Exactly.
Well, and you had said something to the effect of, like, it opens this door, you know, like, once we can be regulated, we can be open, flexible, we can remember, like, so many things that just, I can see why you use the word accelerated. It just, you know, that momentum goes in such a forward path where some of us have just really lived in stuck for many, many years, you know. So this is so much to think about and, you know, really powerful information.
Yeah. Well, and I knew we would go really fast. I knew when we started this that the time would go quickly. Dr. Amy, we're going to make sure we get all the correct things in the show notes so that folks can download the resource guide that you mentioned and know how to contact you. Your business, you do consultations with families that want to explore these issues, correct?
Yeah. So I have a team of health coaches now. And so we offer one-on-one biology of trauma health coaching sessions. And we actually offer attachment focused health coaching sessions. Yeah. We dive deep into these aspects specifically that we're looking at those early factors in life. We have other focuses for our health coaching sessions. Those would be more for the adults and kind of working through their health issues as a result of chronic stress and trauma. Mm-hmm. But we do have attachment focused health coaching sessions.
And you know, what's also very exciting is that you are going to be at our Creating Trauma Sensitive Schools conference in February 2024. And so our attendees can meet you, they can listen to you, they can learn more from you. And I just think that's amazing resource that you'll be able to be there for our attendees in person as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
We are too. I have a feeling that those attendees in particular, most of them being educators, will be talking to you about the adult side of your business, about what we can do with our own incredible stress loads, because it's rough out there these days being an educator.
It's extremely rough. It's a lot of stress. And yeah, that accumulated stress and trauma, we've got to have tools for that, for us to be able to stay strong and resourced and resilient. And to get to our, you know, especially our retirement years and still be in good health.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that. There's so much hope and inspiration there. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Amy, for taking us on a new pathway. I'm sure everybody is like looking up all of the biochemical words that you taught them that maybe they didn't know. And so I know that you have that information available to them and are going to be around for any questions that they may have, you and your team. So that's exciting. And thank you all for listening in today. We hope that this sparks some ideas for you all and that you'll be exploring this biology of trauma avenue. And we will catch you on our next episode. Bye, everyone.
This has been another episode of Regulated and Relational. Next time, Julie and Ginger are going to finish out 2023 by reviewing some of the things that they've learned through season 3 and some of their most meaningful takeaways from this podcast. A special thank you to Joe Kramer for donating our music. For more information about the Attachment and Trauma Network, visit our website at www.attachedtrauma.org. Show notes and upcoming episodes will be available on our website and through anchor.fm. I'm Lorraine Schneider. Thanks for listening.